Chapter 34. Judgment. "I want the scouts out watching," Perrin said forcefully. "Even during the trial."
"The maidens won't like this, Perrin Ebarra," Sulan said. "Not if it makes them miss the chance to dance the spears."
"They'll do it anyway," Perrin said, walking through camp, Danil and Gaul at his side. Behind followed Ozzy and Willasine, his two guards for the day. Sulan inspected Perrin, then nodded.
"It will be done." She moved off.
"Lord Perrin," Danil asked, smelling nervous, "what's this about?"
"I don't know yet," Perrin said. "Something's wrong on the wind."
Danil frowned, looking confused. Well, Perrin was confused too. Confused and increasingly certain. It seemed a contradiction, but it was true. The camp was busy, his armies gathering to meet the White Cloaks. Not his army, his armies. There was so much division among them. Arganda and Galen jostling one another for position, the Two Riversmen resenting the newer bands of mercenaries, the former refugees mashed between them all. And of course, the Aiel, aloof and doing as they wished.
"I'm going to disband them," Perrin told himself. "What does it matter?"
It bothered him nonetheless. It was a disorderly way to run a camp. Anyway, Perrin's people had mostly recovered from this latest bubble of evil. None of them would probably look at their weapons again the same way, but the wounded had been healed and the channelers were rested. The White Cloaks had not been pleased at the delay, which had extended longer than they had probably expected. But Perrin had needed the time for a number of reasons.
"Danil," he said, "my wife has you mixed up in her plots to protect me, I assume."
Danil started.
"How?"
"She needs her secrets," Perrin said. "I miss half of them, but this one was as plain as day. She's not happy about this trial." "What's she got you doing? Some plan with the Ashaman to get me out of danger?"
"Something like that, my lord," Danil admitted.
"I'll go if it turns bad," Perrin said. "But don't jump to it too early. I won't have this turn into a bloodbath because one of the White Cloaks lets out a curse at the wrong time. Wait for my signal. Understood?"
"Yes, my lord,"
Danil said, smelling sheepish.
Perrin needed to be done with this all. Free of it. Now. Because over these last few days, it had begun to feel natural to him. "I'm just a..."
He trailed off.
"Just a what?
A blacksmith?
Could he say that anymore?
What was he?" Up ahead, Niald sat on a stump near the traveling ground. During the last few days, the youthful Ashaman soldier and Gaul had scouted out in several directions at Perrin's orders to see if gateways worked if one got far enough away from camp. Sure enough, it turned out they did, though one had to go for hours to escape the effect. Neither Niald nor Gaul had noted any sort of change other than the weave for gateways working again. There was no barrier or visible indication on this side, but if Perrin guessed right, the area where gateways didn't work matched exactly the area covered by the dome in the wolf dream. That was the dome's purpose, and that was why Slayer guarded it. It wasn't about hunting the wolves, though he surely did that with pleasure. Something was causing both the dome and the problems with the Ashaman.
"Niald," Perrin said, walking up to the Ashaman. "Latest scouting mission went well?"
"Yes, my lord."
"When Grady and you were first telling me about the failing weaves, you said it had happened to you before. When was that?"
"When we tried to open the gateway to retrieve the scouting group from Kyrian," Niald said. "We tried it first, and the weaves fell apart. But we waited a little while and tried again. That time it worked."
"That was just after the first night I saw the dome," Perrin thought. "It came up for a short time, then vanished. Slayer must have been testing it."
"My lord," Niald said, stepping close. He was a fop of a man, but he'd been reliable when Perrin needed him. "What's going on?"
I think someone's setting a trap for us, Perrin said softly. Boxing us in. I've sent some others out to look for the thing causing this. It's probably some kind of object of the One Power. He worried that it might be hidden in the wolf dream. Could something there produce an effect in the real world? Now, you're sure you can't create gateways at all? Not even to other points nearby inside the affected area? Niald shook his head. The rules are different on this side, then, Perrin thought. Or at least it works differently on traveling than it does on shifting in the wolf dream. Niald, you said with the larger gateways, using a circle, you could move the entire army through in a few hours? Niald nodded.
We've been practicing.
We need to be ready for that, Perrin said, looking at the sky. He could still smell that oddity in the air, a faint staleness.
My lord, Niald said, we'll be ready. But if we can't create gateways, then it doesn't matter. We could march the army out to that point beyond the effect, though, and escape from there.
Unfortunately, Perrin suspected that wouldn't do. Hopper had called this a thing of the deep past. That meant there was a good chance Slayer was working with the Forsaken. Or he was one of the Forsaken himself. Perrin had never considered that. Either way, the ones planning this trap would be watching. If his army tried to escape, the enemy would spring its trap or they'd move the dome. The Forsaken had been fooling the Shido with those boxes and had placed them here. And there was his picture being distributed. Was it all part of this trap, whatever it was? Dangers. So many dangers hunting him. Well, what did you expect, he thought. It's Tarmin Gaiden. I wish Elias would return, he said. He'd sent the man on a special scouting mission of his own. Just be ready, Niald. Danil, it'd be best if you'd go pass my cautions on to your men. I don't want any accidents. Danil and Niald went their separate ways, and Perrin walked to the horse pickets to find Stepper. Gaul, quiet as the wind, fell in beside him. Someone's pulling a snare tight, Perrin thought. Slowly, inch by inch, around my leg. Probably waiting for him to fight the White Cloaks. Afterward, his army would be weakened and wounded. Easy pickings. It gave him a chill to realize that if he'd gone to battle with Damodred earlier, the trap might have been sprung right then. The trial suddenly took on enormous import. Perrin had to find a way to forestall a battle until he could get to the wolf dream one more time. In it, perhaps, he could find a way to destroy the dome and free his people.
You change, Perrin Ebarra, Gaul said.
What's that? Perrin said, taking Stepper from a groom.
This is a good thing, Gaul replied. It is good to see you stop protesting about being chief. It is better to see you enjoy command.
I've stopped protesting because I have better things to do, Perrin said. And I don't enjoy being in command. I do it because I have to. Gaul nodded as if he thought Perrin were agreeing with him.
I yield.
Perrin swung into the saddle.
Let's go then. The column is starting to march.
Off with you, Fael said to Aravine. The army is moving out. Aravine curtsied and moved to pass the orders to the refugees. Fael wasn't certain what this day would bring, but she wanted those who stayed behind to break camp and be ready to march, just in case. As Aravine left, Fael noticed Alden, the bookkeeper, joining her. He did seem to be visiting Aravine quite often lately. Perhaps he'd finally given up on Arala. She hastened toward the tent. On her way, she passed Flan Barsteer, John Galen, and Marek Cormer, checking over their bowstrings and arrow fletchings. All three looked up at her and waved. There seemed to be a sense of relief in their eyes, which was a good sign. Once these men had looked ashamed when they'd seen her, as if they felt bad for the way Perrin had seemingly dallied with Berylaine during Fael's absence. Fael spending time with Berylaine, mixed with the formal denunciation of the rumors, was working to convince the camp that nothing inappropriate had happened. Interesting, it seemed that Fael saving Berylaine's life during the Bubble of Evil had had the strongest effect in changing people's minds. They assumed, because of that event, that there was no grudge between the two women. Of course, Fael hadn't saved the woman's life, just helped her. But that wasn't what the rumors said, and Fael was pleased to see them working in her and Perrin's favor for once. She reached the tent and hurriedly washed up with a damp cloth and their basin. She put on some perfume, then dressed in her nicest gown, a deep gray-green with embroidered vine patterns across the bodice and around the hem. Finally, she checked herself in the mirror. Good. She was hiding her anxiety. Perrin would be all right. He would be. She slipped a few knives into her belt and up her sleeves anyway. Outside, a groom had brought daylight for her. She climbed up, missing Swallow, who'd been killed by the Shido. Even her finest dress had skirts divided for riding. She wouldn't carry anything else on the road. Her mother had taught her that nothing destroyed a woman's credibility with soldiers more quickly than riding side saddle. And should the unthinkable happen and Perrin fall, Fael might need to take command of their forces. She trotted up to the front of the gathering army. Perrin sat in his saddle there. How dare he look so patient? Fael didn't let her annoyance show. There was a time to be a tempest, and a time to be a tender breeze. She had already let Perrin know in no uncertain terms what she thought of this trial. For the moment, she needed to be seen supporting him. She rode up beside Perrin as the Aes Sedai gathered behind, walking like the wise ones. No maidens. Where were they? It must be important to keep them from the trial. To Sulin and the others, protecting Perrin was a duty given them by their Kara Karn, and it would be a grave matter of to them if he fell. Scanning the camp, she noted two Gai Shine in hooded white robes hurrying to the front of the line. Gaul, who stood beside Perrin's horse, scowled. One of the figures bowed to him, holding forth a collection of spears. "Freshly sharpened," Chiad said. "And newly fletched arrows," Bane added.
"I have arrows and spears already," Gaul said.
"Yes," the women said, kneeling before him, still holding their offerings.
"What?" he asked.
"We were simply worried for your safety," Bane said. "You prepared those weapons yourself, after all." She said it earnestly, no hint of mockery or insincerity, yet the words themselves were close to patronizing. Gaul started laughing. He took the weapons offered and gave the women his own. Despite the troubles of the day, Fael found herself smiling. There was a devious complexity to Aiel interactions. What should have pleased Gaul regarding his Gai Shine often seemed to frustrate him, and yet that which should have been insulting was met with amusement. As Bane and Chiad retreated, Fael looked over the gathering army. Everyone was coming, not just captains or token forces. Most wouldn't be able to watch the trial, but they needed to be there, in case. Fael pulled up beside her husband. "Something worries you," she said to him.
"The world holds its breath, Fael," he said.
"What do you mean?" He shook his head.
"The last hunt is here. Rand is in danger. More than any of us, he is in danger. And I can't go to him. Not yet."
"Perrin, you're not making any sense. How can you know Rand is in danger?"
"I can see him. Anytime I mention his name or think on him, a vision of him opens to my eyes."
She blinked. He turned toward her, his yellow eyes thoughtful.
"I'm connected to him. He pulls at me, you see. Anyway, I told myself I was going to be open with you about things like this."
He hesitated.
"My army's here. They're being herded, Fael. Like sheep being driven to the butcher.
He suddenly remembered his vision from the wolf dream. Sheep running in front of wolves. He'd thought himself one of the wolves. But could he have been wrong? Light. He had been wrong about that. He knew what it meant now.
I can feel it on the wind, he said. The problem with gateways, it's related to something happening in the wolf dream. Somebody wants us to be unable to escape this place.
A cold breeze, odd in the noonday heat, washed over them.
Are you certain? Fael asked. Yes, Perrin said. Oddly, I am.
That's where the maidens are? Scouting?
Someone wants to trap us and attack. Makes most sense to let us clash with the White Cloaks, then kill whoever survives. But that would require an army, of which there is no sign, just us and the White Cloaks. I have Elias hunting out signs of a waygate in the area, but he hasn't found anything yet. So maybe there's nothing, and I'm just jumping at shadows.
Lately, husband, it's become likely that those shadows can bite. I trust your instincts.
He looked to her, then smiled deeply. Thank you.
So what do we do?
We ride to this trial, Perrin said, and do whatever we can to keep from going to battle with the White Cloaks. Then tonight I see if I can stop the thing that is preventing the gateways. We can't just ride far enough away to escape it. The thing can be moved. I saw it in two places. I'll have to destroy it somehow. After that, we escape.
She nodded, and Perrin gave the call to march. Though the force behind still seemed chaotic, like a rope that had been tangled, the army began to move. The various groups sorted themselves out, unraveling. They made the short trip down the Johanna Road, approaching the field with the pavilion. The White Cloaks had already arrived. They were in formation. It looked as if they'd brought their entire army as well. This was going to be a tense afternoon. Gaul ran beside Perrin's horse, and he didn't seem worried, nor did he have his face veiled. Fael knew he thought it honorable for Perrin to go to trial. Perrin either had to defend himself or admit to and accept judgment. Aiel had walked freely to their own executions to meet To. They rode down to the pavilion. A chair had been set on a low platform at the northern end, its back to the distant forest of Leatherleaf. Morgaze sat in the elevated chair, looking every inch a monarch, wearing a gown of red and gold that Galad must have found for her. How had Fael ever mistaken this woman for a simple lady's maid? Chairs had been placed in front of Morgaze, and White Cloaks filled half of them. Galad stood beside her makeshift throne of judgment. His every lock of hair was in place, his uniform without blemish, his cloak falling behind him. Fael glanced to the side and caught Berylaine staring at Galad and blushing, looking almost hungry. She had not given up on her attempts to persuade Perrin to let her go make peace with the White Cloaks.
"Galad Damodred," Perrin called, dismounting before the pavilion.
Fael dismounted and walked beside him.
"I want you to promise me something before this begins." "And what would that be?" the young commander called from the open-sided tent. "Vow not to let this turn to battle," Perrin said. "I could promise that," Galad said. "But of course, you'd have to promise me that you're not going to run if the judgment falls against you."
Perrin fell silent. Then he rested his hand upon his hammer.
"Not willing to promise it, I see," Galad said. "I give you this chance because my mother has persuaded me that you should be allowed to speak in your defense. But I would sooner die than allow a man who has murdered children to walk away unchallenged. If you do not wish this to turn to battle, Perrin Ebarra, then present your defense well. Either that or accept punishment."
Fael glanced at her husband. He was frowning. He looked as if he wanted to speak the requested promise. She laid a hand on his arm.
I should do it, he said quietly. How can any man be above the law, Fael? I killed those men in Andor when Morghese was queen. I should abide by her judgment.
And your duty to the people of your army? She asked. Your duty to Rand and to the last battle? And to me? Perrin hesitated, then nodded.
You're right.
Then louder, he continued,
Let's be on with this.
Perrin strode into the pavilion, joined immediately by Niald, Danil, and Grady. Their presence made Perrin feel like a coward. The way the four stood made it obvious that they had no intention of letting Perrin be taken. What was a trial if Perrin would not abide by its determination? Nothing more than a sham. The white cloaks watched tensely, their officers standing in the shade of the pavilion, their army at parade rest. They looked as if they had no intention of standing down during the proceedings. Perrin's own forces, larger but less orderly, responded by standing at the ready opposite the white cloaks. Perrin nodded, and Rowan Hearn moved off to make certain Galad had released the captives. Perrin walked to the front of the pavilion, stopping just before Morghese's elevated seat. Fael stayed by his side. There were chairs for him here, and he sat. Several steps to his left was Morghese's stand. To his right, the people sat to watch the trial. His back was toward his army. Fael, smelling wary, sat next to him. Others filed in. Berylaine and Alejandra sat with their guards near him. The Aes Sedai and Wise Ones stood at the back, refusing seats. The last few seats were taken by a few of the Two Rivers men and some of the senior former refugees. The White Cloak officers sat down opposite them, facing Fael and Perrin. Bornhold and Bayer at the front. There were about 30 chairs, likely taken from Perrin's supplies that the White Cloaks had appropriated.
Perrin, Morghese said from her seat, are you certain you want to go through with this?
I am, he said.
Very well,
she said, her face impassive, though she smelled hesitant.
I formally begin this trial. The accused is Perrin Ebarra, known as Perrin Goldeneyes.
She hesitated.
Lord of the Two Rivers, she added. Galad, you will present the charges.
There are three, Galad said, standing. The first two are the unlawful murder of Child Lathyn and the unlawful murder of Child Yamwick. Ebarra is also accused of being a dark friend and of bringing Trollocs into the Two Rivers.
There were angry murmurs from the Two Rivers men at that last charge. Those Trollocs had killed Perrin's own family.
Galad continued, The last charge cannot be substantiated yet, as my men were forced out of the Two Rivers before they could gather proof. As to the first two charges, Ebarra has already admitted his guilt.
Is this so, Lord Ebarra? Morghese asked.
I killed those men, sure enough, Perrin said. But it wasn't murder.
Then this is what the court will determine, Morghese said formally. And this is the dispute.
Morghese seemed a completely different person from Maegdon. Was this how people expected Perrin to act when they came to him for judgment? He had to admit she did lend the proceedings a measure of needed formality. After all, the trial was happening in a tent on a field with the judge's chair elevated by what appeared to be a small stack of boxes with a rug thrown over them.
Galad, Morghese said, your men may tell their side of the story.
Galad nodded to Bayer. He stood, and another white cloak, a young man with a completely bald head, stepped forward to join him. Bornhold remained seated.
Your Grace, Bayer said. It happened about 2 years ago, during the spring. An unnaturally cold spring, I remember. We were on our way back from important business at the command of the Lord Captain Commander, and we were passing through the wilderness of Central Andor. We were going to camp for the night at an abandoned Ogier steading at the base of what was once an enormous statue. The kind of place you assume will be safe.
Perrin remembered that night. A chill east wind blowing across him, ruffling his cloak as he stood by a pool of fresh water. He remembered the sun dying silently in the west. He remembered staring at the pool in the waning light, watching the wind ruffle its surface, holding the axe in his hands. That blasted axe. He should have thrown it away right then. Elias had persuaded him to keep it.
When we arrived, Byer continued, we found that the campsite had been used recently. That concerned us. Few people knew of the steading. We determined, from the single fire pit, that there were not many of these mysterious wayfarers.
His voice was precise, his description methodical. That wasn't how Perrin remembered the night. No, he remembered the hiss of the flames, sparks fluttering angrily into the air as Elias dumped the teapot's contents into the fire pit. He remembered a hasty sending from the wolves flooding his mind, confusing him. The wolves' wariness made it hard to separate himself from them. He remembered the smell of fear on Egwene, the way he fumbled with Bella's saddle as he cinched it. And he remembered hundreds of men who smelled wrong. Like the white cloaks in the pavilion. They smelled like sick wolves who snapped at anything that got too close.
The Lord Captain was worried,
Byer continued. He was obviously not mentioning the captain's name, perhaps to spare Bornhold. The young white cloak captain sat perfectly still, staring at Byar as if he didn't trust himself to look at Perrin.
He thought that maybe the camp had been used by brigands. Who else would douse their fire and vanish the moment someone else approached? That's when we saw the first wolf.
Hiding, breath coming in quick short gasps, Egwene huddled beside him in the dark. The scent of campfire smoke rising from her clothing and from his. Bella breathing in the darkness. The sheltering confines of an enormous stone hand, the hand of Arthur Hawkwing's statue, which had broken free long before. Dapple, angry and worried. Images of men in white with flaming torches. Wind darting between the trees.
The Lord Captain thought the wolves were a bad sign. Everyone knows they serve the Dark One. He sent us to scout. My team searched to the east, looking through the rock formations and shards of the enormous broken statue.
Pain. Men shouting.
Perrin, will you dance with me at Sunday? If we're home by then? The wolves started to attack us,
Byer said, voice growing hard.
It was obvious that they were no ordinary creatures. There was too much coordination to their assaults. There seemed to be dozens of them moving through the shadows. There were men among them, striking and killing our mounts.
Perrin had watched it with two sets of eyes, his own from the vantage of the hand, and the eyes of the wolves, who only wanted to be left alone. They had been wounded earlier by an enormous flock of ravens. They'd tried to drive the men away, scare them. So much fear. Both the fear of the men and the fear of the wolves. It had ruled that night, controlling both sides. He could remember fighting to remain himself, bewildered by the sendings.
That night stretched long,
Byer said, voice growing softer yet full of anger.
We passed a hillside with a massive flat rock at the top, and Child Lathan said he thought he saw something in the shadows there. We stopped, holding forward our lights and saw the legs of a horse beneath the overhang. I gave Lathan a nod and he stepped forward to order whoever was in there down to identify themselves. Well, that man, Ebarra, came out of the darkness with a young woman. He was carrying a wicked axe, and he walked calmly right up to Lathan, ignoring the lance pointed at his chest. And then...
And then the wolves took over. It was the first time it had happened to Perrin. Their sendings had been so strong that Perrin had lost himself. He could remember crushing Lathan's neck with his teeth, the warm blood bursting into his mouth as if he'd bitten into a fruit. That memory had been Hopper's, but Perrin couldn't separate himself from the wolf for the moments of that fight.
And then, Morgaze prompted. And then there was a fight, Byer said. Wolves leaped from the shadow and Ebarra attacked us. He didn't move like a man, but like a beast, growling. We subdued him and killed one of the wolves, but not before Ibarra had managed to kill two of the children.
Bayar sat down. Morghese asked no questions. She turned to the other white cloak who had stood with Bayar.
I have little to lend, the man said. I was there and I remember it exactly the same way. I want to point out that when we took Ibarra into custody, he was already judged guilty. We were going to—
That judgment is of no concern to this trial, Morghese said coldly.
Well then, allow my voice to be the testimony of a second witness. I saw it all too.
The bald white cloak sat down. Morghese turned to Perrin.
You may speak.
Perrin stood up slowly.
Those two spoke truly, Morghese. That's about how it happened.
About? Morghese asked.
He's nearly right.
Your guilt or innocence hangs on his nearly, Lord Ibarra. It is the measure by which you will be judged.
Perrin nodded.
That it does. Tell me something, Your Grace. When you judge someone like this, do you try to understand their different pieces?
She frowned.
What?
My master, the man who trained me as a blacksmith, taught me an important lesson. To create something, you have to understand it. And to understand something, you have to know what it is made of.
A cool breeze blew through the pavilion, ruffling cloaks. That matched the quiet sounds from the plains outside, men shifting in armor and horses stamping, coughs and occasional whispers as his words were passed through the ranks.
I've come to see something lately, Perrin said. Men are made up of a lot of different pieces. Who they are depends on what situation you put them in. I had a hand in killing those two men, but to understand you have to see the pieces of me.
He met Galad's eyes. The young white cloak captain stood with a straight back, hands clasped behind his back. Perrin wished he could catch the man's scent. Perrin turned back to Morghese.
I can speak with wolves. I hear their voices in my mind. I know that sounds like the admission of a madman, but I suspect that many in my camp who hear it won't be surprised. Given time, I could prove it to you, with the cooperation of some local wolves.
That won't be necessary, Morghese said.
She smelled of fear. The whispers from the armies grew louder. He caught Fail's scent. Worry.
This thing I can do, Perrin said. It's a piece of me. Just as forging iron is. Just as leading men is. If you're going to pass judgment on me because of it, you should understand it.
You dig your own grave, Ibarra? Bornhold said, rising and pointing. Our Lord Captain Commander said he could not prove you were a dark friend, and yet here you make the case for us.
That doesn't make me a dark friend, Perrin said.
The purpose of this court, Morghese said firmly, is not to judge that allegation. We will determine Ibarra's culpability for the deaths of those two men, and nothing else. You may sit, Child Bornhold.
Bornhold sat angrily.
I have yet to hear your defense, Lord Ibarra, Morghese said.
The reason I told you what I am, what I do, is to show you that the wolves were my friends.
He took a deep breath.
That night in Andor, it was terrible, as Bayar said. We were scared, all of us. The white cloaks were scared of the wolves were scared of the fire and the threatening motions the men made, and I was plain scared of the world around me. I'd never been out of the Two Rivers before and didn't understand why I heard wolves in my head. Well, none of that is an excuse, and I don't mean it to be one. I killed those men, but they attacked my friends. When the men went hunting for wolf pelts, the wolves fought back.
He stopped. They needed the whole truth.
To be honest, Your Grace, I wasn't in control of myself.
I was ready to surrender, but with the wolves in my head, I felt their pain. Then the White Cloaks killed a dear friend of mine, and I had to fight. I'd do the same thing to protect a farmer being harassed by soldiers.
You're a creature of the shadow, Bornhold said, rising again. Your lies insult the dead.
Perrin turned toward the man, holding his eyes. The tent fell silent, and Perrin could smell the tension hanging in the air.
Have you never realized that some men are different from you, Bornhold? Perrin asked. Have you ever tried to think what it must be like to be someone else? If you could see through these golden eyes of mine, you'd find the world a different place.
Bornhold opened his mouth as if to spit out another insult, but licked his lips as if they had grown dry.
You murdered my father,
he finally said.
The Horn of Valyr had blown, Perrin said. The Dragon Reborn fought Ishamael in the sky. Arthur Hawkwing's armies had returned to these shores to dominate. Yes, I was in Falma. I rode to battle alongside the heroes of the Horn, alongside Hawkwing himself, fighting against the Seanchan. I fought on the same side as your father, Bornhold. I've said that he was a good man, and he was. He charged bravely. He died bravely.
The audience was so still, they seemed statues. Not a one moved. Bornhold opened his mouth to object again, but then closed it.
I swear to you, Perrin said, under the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, that I did not kill your father, nor had I anything to do with his death.
Bornhold searched Perrin's eyes and looked troubled.
Don't listen to him, Dane, Byer said.
The scent of him was strong, stronger than any other in the pavilion, frenzied, like rotten meat.
He did kill your father.
Galad still stood watching the exchange.
I've never understood how you know this, child Byer. What did you see? Perhaps this should be the trial we hold.
It is not what I saw, Lord Captain, Byer said, but what I know. How else can you explain how he survived, yet the Legion did not? Your father was a valiant warrior, Bornhold. He would never have fallen to the Seanchan.
That's foolishness, Galad said. The Seanchan have beaten us over and over again. Even a good man can fall in battle.
I saw Golden Eyes there, Byer said, gesturing toward Perrin. Fighting alongside ghostly apparitions. Creatures of evil.
The heroes of the Horn, Byer, Perrin said. Couldn't you see that we were fighting alongside the White Cloaks?
You seem to be, Byer said wildly. Just as you seem to be defending the people in the Two Rivers. But I saw through you, Shadowspawn. I saw through you the moment I met you.
Is that why you told me to escape? Perrin said softly. When I was confined in the Elder Lord Bornhold's tent following my capture, you gave me a sharp rock to cut my bonds and told me that if I ran, nobody would chase me.
Byer froze. He seemed to have forgotten that until this moment. You wanted me to try to get away, Perrin said, so that you could kill me.
You wanted Egwene and me dead very badly.
Is this true, child Byer? Galad asked.
Byer stumbled.
Of course not.
Suddenly he spun and turned to Morgaze atop her simple throne of judgment.
This trial is not about me, but him. You have heard both sides. What is your answer? Judge, woman!
You should not speak to my mother so, Galad said quietly.
His face was impassive, but Perrin smelled danger on him. Bornhold, looking very troubled, had sat back down and was holding his head with his hand.
No, it is all right, Morgaze said. He is right. This trial is about Perrin Ebarra.
She turned from Byer to regard Perrin. He looked back calmly. She smelled as if she were curious about something.
Lord Ebarra, do you feel you have spoken adequately for yourself?
I was protecting myself and my friends, Perrin said. The White Cloaks had no authority to do what they did, ordering us out, threatening us. You know their reputation as well as any, I suspect. We had good reason to be wary of them and disobey their orders. It wasn't murder. I was just defending myself.
Morghese nodded. I will make my decision, then. What of having others speak for Perrin? Fael demanded, standing. That won't be needed, Lady Fael, Morghese said. So far as I can tell, the only other person we could interview would be Egwene Alvear, which doesn't seem within the reasonable bounds of this trial. But it is enough, Morghese interrupted, voice growing cold. We could have half a dozen children name him Darkfriend and 24 of his followers laud his virtues. Neither would serve this trial. We are speaking of specific events on a specific day.
Fael fell silent, though she smelled furious. She took Perrin's arm, not sitting back down. Perrin felt regretful. He had presented the truth, but he wasn't satisfied. He hadn't wanted to kill those White Cloaks, but he had. And he'd done it in a frenzy without control. He could blame the wolves, he could blame the White Cloaks, but the honest truth was that he had lost control. When he'd awoken, he'd barely remembered what he had done.
You know my answer, Perrin, Morghese said. I can see it in your eyes.
Do what you must, Perrin said.
Perrin Ebarra, I pronounce you guilty.
No, Fael screamed. How dare you? He took you in.
Perrin put a hand on her shoulder. She'd been reaching for her sleeve by reflex, aiming for the knives there.
This has nothing to do with how I personally feel about Perrin, Morghese said. This is a trial by Andorran law. Well, the law is very clear. Perrin may feel that the wolves were his friends, but the law states that a man's hound or livestock is worth a certain price. Slaying them is unlawful, but killing a man in retribution is even more so. I can quote the very statutes to you if you wish.
The pavilion was silent. Niald had risen halfway from his chair, but Perrin met his eyes and shook his head. The Aes Sedai and Wise Ones wore faces that betrayed nothing. Berylaine looked resigned, and sun-haired Aleandra had one hand to her mouth. Danil and Aziel Thone moved up to Perrin and Fael, and Perrin did not force them to back down.
What does it matter? Bayar demanded. He's not going to abide by the judgment.
Other White Cloaks stood, and this time Perrin couldn't stare down all those on his side who did likewise.
I have not passed sentence yet, Morghese said,
voice crisp.
What other sentence could there be? Bayar asked. You said he's guilty.
Yes, Morghese said, though I believe there are further circumstances relevant to the sentencing.
Her face was still hard, and she smelled determined. What was she doing?
The White Cloaks were an unauthorized military group within the confines of my realm, Morghese said. By this light, while I do rule Perrin guilty of killing your men, I rule the incident subject to the Kanek Protocol.
Is that the law that governs mercenaries? Galad asked.
Indeed.
What is this? Perrin asked.
Galad turned to him.
She has ruled that our altercation was a brawl between unemployed mercenary groups. Essentially, the ruling states there were no innocents in the clash. You are not therefore charged with murder. Instead, you have killed illegally.
There's a difference?
Danil asked, frowning.
One of semantics, Galad said, hands still clasped behind his back.
Perrin caught his scent. It was curious.
Yes, this is a good ruling, Mother. But the punishment is still death, I believe. It can be, Morghese said. The code is much more lenient
depending on the circumstances.
Then what do you rule? Perrin asked.
I do not, Morghese said. Galad, you are the one responsible for the men killed, or the closest we have. I will pass sentencing on to you. I have given the ruling and the legal definitions. You decide the punishment.
Galad and Perrin locked eyes across the pavilion.
I see, Galad said. A strange choice, Your Grace. Ebarra, it must be asked again. Will you abide by the decisions of this trial that you yourself suggested, or must this be settled with conflict?
Fael tensed at his side. Perrin could hear his army moving behind him, men loosening swords in their sheaths, muttering. The word passed through them as a low hum. Lord Perrin named guilty. They're going to try to take him. We won't let it happen, will we?
The bitter sense of fear and anger mixed in the pavilion, both sides glowering at one another. Above it all, Perrin could smell that wrongness to the air.
Can I continue to run, he thought, hounded by that day?
There were no coincidences with Tavirin. Why had the pattern brought him here to confront these nightmares from his past?
I will abide by it, Damodred, Perrin said.
What?
Fael gasped.
But, Perrin said, raising a finger, only so long as you promise to delay execution of this punishment until after I have done my duty at the last battle.
You'll accept judgment after the last battle?
Bornhold asked, sounding befuddled.
After what may be the end of the world itself? After you've had time to escape? Perhaps betray us? What kind of promise is that?
The only kind I can make, Perrin said. I don't know what the future will bring, or if we'll reach it. But we're fighting for survival. Maybe the world itself. Before that, all other concerns are secondary. This is the only way I can submit.
How do we know you'll keep your word? Galad asked. My men name you Shadowspawn.
I came here, didn't I? Perrin asked.
Because we had your people captive.
And would Shadowspawn give one hair's worry about that? Perrin asked.
Galad hesitated.
I swear it, Perrin said, by the light and by my hope of salvation and rebirth, by my love of Fael, and on the name of my father. You'll have your chance, Galad Damodred. If you and I both survive until the end of this, I'll submit to your authority.
Galad studied him, then nodded.
Very well. No, Bayar cried. This is foolishness.
We leave, child Bayar, Galad said, walking to the side of the pavilion.
My decision has been made. Mother, will you attend me?
I'm sorry, Galad, Morghese said. But no. Ebarra is making his way back to Andor, and I must go with him.
Very well,
Galad continued on.
Wait, Perrin called. You didn't tell me what my punishment will be once I submit.
No, Galad said, still walking. I didn't.